This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Got some good stuff coming up, man. We've got Pettycast coming up at 8 o'clock. I've got almost a mini Pettycast I want to do even before then. We've got audio from WEEI talking about the Bregman-Devers situation. Good catch on that one, Seth. Nice job. We'll have that for you guys in about 20 minutes
or so. I've been stalking Boston media ever since I realized there's drama with Alex Bregman in his new spot.
Yes. And Bregman's not even causing it. He's causing it by being excellent at third base.
He's causing it by being a much better third baseman than the incumbent third baseman.
Yes.
Rafael Devers, incredible at the plate.
Yep.
Awful at third base.
Yes. Yeah. Good at hitting.
But doesn't want to stop playing third base.
Yes, sir.
Can you imagine if you were offered a job? Or no, you're doing your current job. But they were like, hey, by the way, we want to totally keep paying you the same thing you're doing. But the thing that you're worst at, you don't have to do anymore.
Right.
We just don't want you to do it anymore. Like, it'd be like I don't even know what you're bad at, Sean. Not much. But like whatever that thing might be, you say it, you name it. Yourself.
I'm probably would love to get good at like pushing out the stuff on social media that I need to.
Okay, hey Sean, this is what we're gonna do.
Yeah.
We just hired one of the best social media managers in the nation. Yeah. And he's going to take over all of that for you. And you're like, no. Sean tweets his own tweets.
Right.
No. You can still compose the tweets, but he's going to put it out on multiple different platforms. He'll do video editing for you and everything. And you, as Rafael Devers, are basically saying, no.
No.
I will keep doing that thing that I'm awful at.
I'm awful at. Yeah, that's the best part, is that I'm bad at it, you know, or I need improvement. Oh, my God. It's crazy. We'll have some good Boston audio on that coming up a little later on in this nice long segment. Appreciate you getting up with us, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Hey, Joe Mixon was on with Josina Anderson. She has a podcast, and Joe Mixon was on with her, and had some interesting thoughts on D'Amico Ryans. I don't know if any of this is super surprising, but I love hearing it. You know, you're trying to feel good about the team going into the offseason here. Here was Joe Mixon when Josina Anderson asked him about just thoughts on playing for D'Amico Ryans. And we should remind people that when Mixon first came to the Texans, you know, Mixon was getting ready to get cut by the Bengals. The Texans said, no, don't cut him. Here's a seventh rounder. We'll take him. We'll extend him. You know, we'll give him a contract. But if you recall, like Joe Mixon, you know, first press conference and everything, like he was very skittish, you know, like he was.
It was like he had just been dropped down in an alien land.
Yeah.
Like aliens had plucked him up with a tractor beam and plucked him into a new universe. And he was still trying to get his bearings.
Yeah.
Like he didn't realize he was on the trading block necessarily.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he gets picked up and dumped somewhere else
that he's not super familiar with. And he's played his whole career in Cincinnati. He's been to a Super Bowl in Cincinnati. He was part of a resurgence there. So So pretty jarring, but D'Amico Ryan's made it all better for him. Here's his thoughts on D'Amico.
Since day one, when I walked in the door, I mean, when I met D'Amico, I talked to him on the phone very briefly, like the same day over the trade, like very briefly. And at this point, like honestly, like I said, when I got that call, like I'm not hearing nothing. I'm still trying to process, like, damn, this really happened. Like, this really went on, you know what I'm saying? But when I walked in day one, I got the biggest handshake hug. And I'm like, damn, like, I ain't, you know, it's been a
I thought it was a different vibe.
Yeah, like, I'm like, bro, like, you know, and I grew up a Niners fan.
Okay.
Because I'm from the Bay.
Okay.
So I didn't see D'Amico when he was just an assistant over there.
Yeah.
He was a linebacker coach. Mm-hmm. Then he came a coordinator. Obviously, from afar, I'm a fan, but mm-hmm. I rock with my team.
Right.
But like I said, when I walked in the building and I got that handshake hug.
It felt real.
And after that conversation that we had, it was like, it was real. Like you say, it was real. And since that day, since that moment, like me and D'Amico been like this.
Okay, so you know what's cool
he did
about
the,
that?
He did the fingers crossed thing.
Oh, he crossed like his this. Fingers
yeah,
like this.
Yeah, we were all like right. this, yeah.
That hasn't been like that hasn't been hijacked by some to some no. some niche on. So okay, all no, right.
I don't
good.
Think it's racist.
We can get away with doing this without getting canceled.
As far as I know, right. Joe Mixon did it. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So I never know what hand signals.
I know.
To
I just
anymore.
Keep fists. That's all I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the cool thing about that story is immediately it made me think of the opposite end of that spectrum. Is okay, Joe Mixon's being brought into the organization. My final year with the Texans, my 10th year in the NFL, was when D'Amico was a rookie. And I got injured early in that season, so I only got to spend a little bit of time with D'Amico before I got injured. And then, you know, I kind of, at the end of the year, I told both Rick Smith and Gary Kubiak that I felt like some things were messed up in the way things were being operated on defense. In such a way that I figured, all right, I'm coming off an ACL. I'm going into my 11th year. I'm probably getting cut by having this conversation, but I had to say it.
Yeah.
I really like, I felt that there were some things that Richard Smith, the defensive coordinator, was doing that were just bleeped up. And I thought, and I told Rick Smith that I thought a certain way he handled the situation was bleeped up. And I'm like, all right, I'm probably going to get cut. And lo and behold, I was cut. It was good. It was one of my first accurate sports predictions. And, but I was away from Houston when I got cut. And then it wasn't going to work out for me to go pick up my stuff and everything for another few weeks. So by the time I showed up in Houston to pick up my stuff, it was kind of, it was weird because like, okay, I had to park in the visiting lot, which I'd never done before. And I'm feeling very conspicuous walking in, just uncomfortable walking in. Like, I don't know what the hell this is. I'm probably going to be treated like a postal employee and have a, you know, like a psychotic postal employee or something. And as I'm walking in, D'Amico was walking out of the building, and I saw him. I was like, "Oh, it's D'Amico!" And I was going to congratulate him on having a really good rookie season,
rookie of the year.
Like, yeah, tell him just you know how cool it was that he had done what he'd done. And it was, and he immediately like became because I'm thinking like, yeah, I'm the older grizzled veteran, probably going to retire soon. And it was like the exact opposite, D'Amico. Was like came up to you, was like, hey man, how are you doing? And like just all that D'Amico energy and everything. Yeah. And I remember being kind of blown away by just the like how sincere he was about it. And just like I felt like, oh wow, I don't know if D'Amico even remembered me.
Yeah.
And he's really just inquiring about me and everything. And it was like one of those little moments where you realize, okay, this kid's just wired differently
yeah.
than other, not just other players, but other people.
Yes.
And yeah, I think that first impression that Joe Mixon got is probably the first impression a lot of guys get from D'Amico.
That's a great story, man. That is like.
And then I went in and I tore everybody a new one.
That's right.
No, it was
then
cool.
I went in and trashed everybody's lockers. And you know who was first? D'Amico Ryans.
I kicked over everything that was kickable.
That's right. You're not going to pander to me, rookie. I'm going to rip your locker in two.
I went in with crazy eyes. I wanted to put everybody on edge.
So you were, that's interesting. So you had been cut, but you were going back to the building to get your stuff. Do they like walk you through with like a security person?
No. I knew.
Not that you would need it. I'm just curious if there's protocols.
Yeah. I don't know what the policy was or anything, but it is a weird situation, you know. And I had been intending to get in there at like 6 a.m., but I didn't get there until like 9 a.m. It wasn't the official off-season program yet, but there were a lot of people in there.
Because there's nothing analogous to that in the real world. Like if somebody gets fired and they just randomly show up 3 weeks later at the building.
I was an original Texan. Yeah. I'd been there the whole first 5 years.
You should be allowed to. I'm just saying, like, if you were working in accounting or something like that.
I always tried to, like, I kind of had a Will Anderson approach to things. I always felt it was really important to be, you know, really, really nice and good to all the people in the building.
Yeah.
So at the very least, that I got the karma paid back there, and that for 20 minutes of time when I wanted to go get my satchel of stuff, they treated me with dignity.
Did you have a lot of stuff in there you had to get? Did you have a...
No, it was all just like Jay Brunetti, the equipment manager, had it all organized.
Oh, that's nice.
Just, you know, good. Just personal clothing and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Here's more from
my list of people to kill, all that.
You know, we didn't have iPhones at that time. You know, otherwise you'd have a note on your iPhone with that now. Seth had it handwritten tucked in his locker.
We did it old school.
Old school. Okay, here's Joe Mixon. This is more Joe Mixon with Josina Anderson. The biggest thing that he loves, the thing he loves most about D'Amico Ryans.
One thing that I love about D'Amico more than anything is that he's a player coach, and he don't care who you are on the team. If you doing your thing, he gonna let you know. But also, if you ain't doing your thing, like, he gonna let you know too in front of everybody. So it ain't like nobody's.
He don't discriminate. Yeah, no. Equal opportunity critic.
For real, straight up. But like I said, I mean, to be real, like I ain't never seen a coach that just love their players like the way he do.
Mm.
You know, everybody, when somebody make a play, he jumping up and down, turned up with him. Like, it's just almost like, I'm sure he like, damn, I wish I was out there. But he getting his love and joy through us. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, like I said, since day one, you know, came through here, and D'Amico just been everything. Like, when I say everything, like, the man really a national treasure for us.
Mm.
Like, so, you know, I'd be long gone, I hope, before he ever even think to leave his spot. You know what I'm saying? But I'm telling you, like, everybody on this team, like, they love D'Amico. The culture he brought in here, the way he got them boys working, the way that players show up every day to work.
So there you go.
Yeah. So, national treasure.
National treasure. Totally agree.
Now, this is the thing, and this is where I always get agitated, as you know, when people start thinking that this coach is too afraid to tear into guys, or this guy's too afraid to, you know, lambaste him or whatever. Like, the flaw in that thinking, and it's a problem with coaching at every single level, is that typically, if you've got the right kinds of guys on a team, you might have a few guys that do, like, respond well to getting torn into or what have you. But the problem is, usually when football coaches are screaming at an entire team, it's a message that's meant for, like, three people, and everybody else gets the brunt of it. Yeah. It's like you've got 20 doves, 20 endangered doves, and one pigeon in the middle of them. So to kill that pigeon, you blast the whole flock with bird shot.
Right.
You know, like, it doesn't. It's usually a few guys. The vast majority of guys on a football team or any sports team anywhere really want to do the right thing, and it's a matter of, man, sometimes just being corrected in front of the entire squad is enough. And without vitriol or anything, but just being coached specifically and sometimes aggressively, but in front of everybody, that's enough to motivate guys. And if you find yourself always screaming at an entire team, it just starts to fall on deaf ears.
Yes.
You just get a callous about it.
Yep.
You know. And I think with D'Amico, he's somewhere in between. I would put Pete Carroll at one end of the. I would put Tony Dungy at one end of the spectrum, and then Bill Belichick at the other.
Yep.
But Pete Carroll's also more on that kind of more soft-spoken side.
Monotone,
of
yeah,
yeah. In the NFL, and in sports in general, but especially in pro sports, the ultimate hammer is that if you don't do your job, you're getting cut.
Yep.
You're going to be out on the street.
Yep.
And that's all. That was always Pete Carroll's approach, was like, listen, I don't need to yell and scream at guys. I just create a culture where everybody knows that they're always competing for their job. And if you got the right kinds of guys in there, they're going to respond when you explain to them, no, this isn't good enough. And if you got guys who want to keep their job, no, hearing and being explained that, okay, I need to be better, that's enough motivation for them. And
yeah.
I think D'Amico does a good job of coaching very energetically and very aggressively, but just because it's not with the tone of voice that they do in the movies or that they do in Marine Corps boot camp, that doesn't mean that it's not effective.
Yeah, I love what you laid out there. I love what Joe Mixon just said in that second cut that we played, because there was a point in the season, Seth, and I think it was probably about the time where the offensive line was just cratering, like right in the middle of the season, where Texan fans started to get frustrated. They started out 6-2, and then all of a sudden they're 6-4, and they're coughing up leads to the Lions. And that's when that's when a lot of Texan fans really wanted some degree of change, or they wanted D'Amico to turn into this different type of D'Amico. And there was this notion, there was this notion from some of the fan base that D'Amico was way too buddy-buddy with everybody. You know, that he's just too friendly and too positive, and he needed to do some of the things you're talking about some coaches doing, which I need him to get angry and rip into everybody. I liked hearing that from Mixon, and I never thought that it wasn't the case, but that there's the D'Amico who will heavily praise you when you're doing well, and then there's the D'Amico that will make sure that you don't do, or at least best effort to make sure you don't do the wrong things again.
Well, remember the Lions game when Azeez Alshire had been in the hospital with a flu like 2 days prior to the game, and he went out, and the first series was rough. I think the first two series may have been rough. And the story that emerged afterwards was it was simply that D'Amico told Azeez, listen, I can't keep you out there if you're going to be playing like that. And then it flipped the switch in Azeez. Then, and Azeez, nobody's ever going to accuse Azeez of not caring or what have you. But D'Amico, it wasn't the entire defense that needed to be ripped into or anything. Azeez Alshire needed to play better in that moment. And he ended up playing better in the game. And, that kind of more, again, shooting the pigeon with a rifle so you don't kill all the other doves, a targeted approach to how you deal with different individuals, that's a skill in coaching. And I think D'Amico's very, very good at that.
Yep. People weighing in, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. That was Seth's who's coming with me moment when he went back in the building. Jerry Maguire.
Jerry Maguire.
Yeah. Seth went back to get his goldfish and his calculator, and he went into the cubicles there with all the regular workers. He's like, "Who's coming with me? I'm going to start my own football team, and it's going to be great. Who's coming?"
And I walked out with the third string long snapper. Yeah.
Yes, the Renee Zellweger of the team, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's funny. Seth went back with a checklist. My list of people, my lipstick, and my track shoes. Seth doesn't have lipstick in his locker.
What's that a reference to?
I don't know. I just found it funny that you had a list of people, lipstick, and track shoes in your locker. That's funny to me.
Hey, whoever texted that, explain the reference there.
Explain it.
I can't pull it up.
This says, hey, Seth, as you just told your story about how you were walking to the building, I'm passing by NRG Stadium right now. How ironic. Trice from Rochester is who sent that in. Yeah. East High.
The funny thing about that, too, is that when you walk in from the visitor's lot, I think it's still this. I think the layout is still this way. Maybe it's changed. But the GM's office, the head coach, a lot of the important people are right there above that south club end, or that south entrance.
Yeah.
So you're kind of like, I don't know if this guy's okay. Am I being watched? All right. Is Rick Smith standing there smoking a cigar?
Hands behind his back, just nodding his head like, yeah. Hey,
it was genuinely very amicable when I got released. I figured it was coming, and Kubiak was always awesome to me. I have zero issues ever with Kubiak letting me go when he did. It was when he called to tell me they were cutting me, it ended up being me giving him a pep talk about what a good job I thought he did that first year. I had zero animosity for Gary Kubiak.
That's good. If I could pick anybody to cut me or fire me from my job, Gary Kubiak would be very high up the list, I think.
You know, I feel like he, whether, I don't know, you know, he has to cut a lot of people, but I felt like he genuinely felt bad when he cut me. You know, some of that, it's kind of, you know, if you're an executioner, after a while, it's just a, it's just another head you're lopping off, I would imagine.
Original Houston Texan.
Yeah, but I'd only been with him for less than a year.
I know.
Yeah, it was,
but he respected the long, rich history of the Houston Texans at that point.
When we found out that Kubiak was going to be the coach, the head coach, the Broncos were still in the playoffs. And I remember, I think my first quote in the paper that he might have seen was, I'm kind of hoping they lose so we can get here and get to work.
Well, you're being honest. Hey, man.
I was. Yeah. I was honest. I was like, I was like, screw the Broncos. We need Kubiak here right now.
Absolutely. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Hopefully you enjoyed that mix and audio. That was good stuff. I enjoyed that. All right, let's circle back to this Bregman-Devers drama up in Boston. Ben, we got the WEEI. All right, this is the morning show. This is this morning in Boston on our sister station.
And so lay it all out. Devers is flat out saying he doesn't want to move off of third base, even though he's a bad third baseman. I mean, I can remember having a conversation with Brandy about it in a Red Sox series where we were talking about, okay, this is one of the differences between the Astros and the Red Sox.
Yes.
The Red Sox, and if I recall properly, they were having a game where they were sloppy all over the place.
I know the era of Red Sox baseball you're talking about, because I remember they were an awful, awful, awful defensive team, like across the board, but Devers was...
Even Devers, you're looking at the difference between Devers and Bregman. Like you could see when those two teams played. All right, these are the margins that really matter.
Yes.
So now that guy, we were talking about Devers specifically, and the stats back it up. He's negative run value every year defensively, except for one weird year where he was really good.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. It's not good for the team that he's playing third base instead of Alex Bregman.
Right.
But he doesn't even want to go to DH.
No,
he's just flat out saying, nope, I'm the third baseman.
He didn't say nope. What did he say, Ben? Do we have?
Nope.
We had someone say, don't ever stop playing Rafael Devers. Nope.
No.
Hey, Rafael, do you like Alex Bregman's pasta?
No.
Or no, not pasta. Or salsa. Do you like a salsa?
No.
His pasta sucks too.
You don't like the chunky salsa?
No.
You don't like the watery salsa?
No.
You don't like the extra spicy salsa?
No.
Dude, Alex. Alex Bregman, within 3 weeks, I promise you, is going to have a clam chowder.
Oh, yeah, and it's going to be awful. It's going to be
the worst
watery. It's going to look
rubbery-ass clam chowder.
It's going to look like spoiled milk. It's going to be terrible.
There's one thing you don't want to screw up either. It's clam chowder.
No.
Because you can die.
Yes.
Yeah, we've got Alex Bregman up there actively trying to kill people with his clam chowder. And, yeah, he is a better third baseman than Rafael Devers.
I'm telling you, that's a possibility that he shifts gears and does clam chowder for 3 years up there. You're semi-joking. I can see that happening. All right, so anyways, let's get to WEEI. Greg Hill, Jermaine Wiggins, and Courtney Cox, who probably gets confused for the other Courtney Cox sometimes. But they're the three-person show, morning show up on our sister station, WEEI. This was their conversation this morning about the Alex Bregman, Rafael Devers situation.
Is there anything that is more Boston Red Sox than finally coughing up and deciding to write a check to Alex Bregman and then infuriating your superstar third baseman to the point at which he is calling you publicly liars? Is there anything more Red Sox than that?
This is kind of interesting to me. If you can't perform at the position and somebody can perform better than you, isn't it about the organization trying to get better there? Like, what? I give him a shot, okay, but guess what, Rafi? If you can't get it done, we're going to put somebody there that can get it done.
Well, I mean, he was acting like he had been promised by, I guess, Chaim Bloom, because Alex Cora backed the equipment truck over Chaim Bloom later on, that he had been promised the third base for life or something like that. So, I mean, I don't know.
So this is fun,
This sounds like Brandon Cooks with Jack Easterby.
Yeah.
that Brandon Cooks felt like he'd been promised things. I've been promised things, and now it's been pulled out from underneath me.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it's just so weird because whenever I watch Rafael Devers play, he seems like the opposite of a guy who would be... He seems happy-go-lucky. I'm like, oh, man, this guy can hit the crap out of the baseball, but he seems to be having a good time doing it. He's bad at third base.
Yeah.
It seems like he would be the most amenable to this.
You would think.
And yet, Bregman, already causing issues in the clubhouse.
Yes, yeah. Bregman, clubhouse cancer one day in.
He's Ed Reed. He's Ed Reed at this point. He's the guy that you thought he was going to teach you how to be a championship squad, and now all he's doing is pissing off one of your best players.
Yes. People are weighing in with ideas for Alex Bregman at a Breggy lobster roll up in Boston. Bregman is probably more qualified to make clam chowder than salsa. He grew up in Albuquerque. Albuquerque's got a Tex-Mex flavor.
That's a racist take, and I'll not allow it.
It's a geographic take. Bregman's trash salsa plays well in the Northeast. That's true.
I'm from the
Northeast. We do not know good salsa up there. That is very true. He may brainwash some people into thinking that the salsa is actually good.
That old Pace, the old Pace ad, yeah, where they're looking at the jar and they're like, where is it made? New York City.
I remember Pace salsa.
I heard Bregman's salsa was made in Mexico or in China. It was,
tastes like it.
You got an Alibaba.
Someone says that we should play the Jose Altuve come again clip and the Devers no clip back to back. Is that doable, Ben? Is that okay? Don't worry about it. Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know.
Get on the ones and twos, Ben.
I didn't know if you had Altuve on the ones and twos.
Crank that crap out.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. For those who don't know, the Altuve come again clip. That was when you and I interviewed him like a year ago.
That's when
I
asked him about that moment when
Verlander
was it in the ALCS in 2017 when Verlander ducked his head back into the clubhouse and was like, was just yelling at the dugout, like, hey, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
He had his shirt off and his shoulder wrapped. And on TV, in my memory, it had played out like an iconic moment. And so I asked Altuve about that moment.
Yeah.
And Altuve said...
What was that again?
So I went back and watched it. I went back and watched it. When you watch it, not a single person was listening.
No.
To Verlander.
He was crazy. He's like a crazy person on the median in the middle of the feeder road. Yeah.
There were like equipment staff guys just walking past him, not even paying him any mind at all. Yeah. So, of course, Altuve didn't know what the hell I was talking about. In my mind, I had built it up into this iconic moment where the veteran leader was just showing how grit your teeth and go for it.
Seth has been sitting on this question for 7 years. He'd been sitting on this question like, I'm going to get the opportunity to ask Altuve about this someday, and the face of this era of Astros baseball is going to climb on board and tell us how, you're right, Seth, this was the moment that flipped everything for us, that pep talk from Justin Verlander. And instead, when Seth set up and asked the question, he got...
When was that again?
No. You know, that time when Bregman, or that time when Verlander yelled at the entire dugout, and not a single person even looked at him.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. What was that again?
When was that again?
No.
Was that?
No.
Yeah. Hey, Devers, have you heard about that story in Boston?
No.
if Alex Bregman, if it's ever his turn to give you guys a pep talk, are you even going to be listening to him?
No.
Yeah, exactly. You're mad at him. All right. So that's how they're feeling about it up in Boston today.
Locker room, clubhouse cancer, Alex Bregman.
That's it, man. That's it.
He'll give you cancer with his salsa, and he'll give you cancer with his ability to play third base.
Text message, Jim Adler, Texas Hammer text line, Breggy Bomb cream pie. Oh, that would be so fun if he just started pandering to Boston via food. That would be awesome.
Speaking with a Boston accent.
Oh, dude, that would be amazing. That would, if Bregman started talking like the guys on Good Will Hunting, that would be incredible.
You know, the thing is, though, if he started speaking with a Boston accent a little bit, people in Boston wouldn't notice it, because you never know what you're like. If you grow up in an area, you don't even realize that you sound any different than anybody else.
Yeah.
So it was like when Brian Kelly did it. When he did that weird Southern accent at the pep rally, people that have a genuine Southern accent are kind of like, well, I didn't, what sounded weird about that? Like, he doesn't sound, because it doesn't sound to them like like they're not going to think, oh, he sounds like us, but they're also not going to think he sounds any different than anybody else necessarily.
I can't believe that. I can't believe you're kind of letting Brian Kelly off the hook here for how bad that accent was a little bit. He was terrible.
Well, no, but we know. I just from our
I'm
listeners,
here with my family.
Yeah, well, because from our listeners' perspective, a lot of them were like, "What are you talking about? That doesn't sound weird or anything. It doesn't sound like a Louisiana accent."
No, definitely like,
yeah,
not.
Yeah, because he's trying to do a Louisiana accent, and he's end up doing like a stereotypical Southern accent.
Yeah. It was.
I'm here with my family.
Bregman's Boston baked beans. That would be the height of like the pandering right there.
Yeah.
Bregman Boston baked beans, clam chowder, baked beans. Boston cream pie, anything involving lobsters, yes.
I feel good. I feel right. I feel like I'm starting to dislike Bregman already.
Yeah, we got to get there.
Even though,
man.
Again, as he drives a wedge into the clubhouse up there in Boston, it's through no fault of his own.
No.
His only crime is that he's a really good third baseman.
As of right now, that is his only crime. You know, we'll see how he mixes in with his new teammates, but enjoying the drama for sure. I tell you, like, we're light on headlines this week, so one of the biggest things that people are still talking about it on TV in the studio here, is this NBA All-Star Weekend. And going back, and maybe the best take on this thing so far that I've seen is Kevin Durant, who just tweeted out, like, if everybody hates it so much, why are we doing this? And I'm like, good take. You know what? I mean, I know why. It generates a lot of money in TV. You know, you promised it to TV networks. But it's like, the fallout from this is some of the weirdest stuff. Like, it's the biggest topic at NBA All-Star Weekend was what's wrong with NBA All-Star Weekend. Like,
including from the actual people covering NBA All-Star Weekend.
Yes. Yeah. It's like they had Draymond Green sitting there, like, saying that literally in between the games, you know, because they, for those who didn't watch it, I know a lot of you did not watch it, they divided all the All-Stars into four teams and played like a mini tournament, you know, two semis and a final. They divided the All-Stars into three teams, and then they took the Rising Stars game winner from Friday and made them the fourth team. And that agitated Draymond to no end. So, like, in between the games, he's like, this is just wrong. We'll have this in the Pettycast a little bit later. It's just, as I'm watching this, I'm like, I cannot believe this is a professional sports league, and this is their showcase weekend. And you've got announcers talking about how horrible it is. You've got players that are answering questions about them not trying in all the games. It's the weirdest thing.
It's the weirdest thing, especially when it comes back to it. And this is where you and I were talking about it during the break. I mean, the NFL Pro Bowl has turned into a joke as well.
Yes.
They don't even play football. They play flag football.
Yep.
You understand it a little bit more. You made the good point that with football, at least, it's the physicality of it all. It's at the end of a season. Like, it makes sense. And it's always been a kind of a modified version of football, even back when guys still cared. It wasn't
blitz
as violent.
Yeah.
But with this, with basketball, what's so frustrating is you really feel like, wait a second, are you serious? You can't go out and give me 15 hard minutes.
Right.
You know, you can't go out and just actually give a damn about a game of basketball in the middle of the season where you've got a week off ahead of time and up to a week off afterwards. It's frustrating.
It is. And it got me thinking, like, has any sporting event, like, lost its luster as much as NBA All-Star Weekend? When I asked you that off the air, you brought the Pro Bowl's a great example. I just think there's better reasons for the Pro Bowl being that way, which you just pointed out. But, like, there's no excuse not to go at least half speed playing basketball. Like, these guys don't, they're in first gear in that game, man.
I thought there was promise in this format, at least just in that it might be, because you create a tournament and people naturally are going to care a little bit more about it. You have the young guys going versus the veterans and all of that.
Yeah.
But no. There's nothing they can do to get NBA players to care about playing hard in the All-Star.
Yeah, and that's what's so weird. Like, when they actually ask a player about, like, well, what do you think of this new format? Because they've tweaked the format multiple times now. Remember, like, for a few years, they had the leading vote getters trying to do it playground style, like picking their teams and stuff like that. And they're like, well, I get what the league's doing. They're trying to make it more competitive, you know? And it's like, you're the reason it's not like you answering this question. You are 1/24th of the reason that this thing is not competitive.
I'll tell you another thing too. One of the formats that's been floated out there, I despise myself for why I don't like this format, but they're saying U.S. players versus international players.
Yeah.
I can't handle the ego blow of the U.S. players getting crushed in an all-star game by the international players when you've got guys who grow up in war-torn regions, who's like impoverished nations where a lot of people that they grew up with might be their only opportunity to watch them and everything. Like, no, I don't want that. I can't handle the ego crush to the U.S. just cruising through where all these players from Africa and Europe and Asia at times are just destroying the American team.
So you don't even want the game. You're already counting it. You're nervous they're going to lose that game if they ever do that.
Yes. Petrified.
See, I still think the best. I still think.
Who are our American born centers?
Yeah, that's a good question. I hadn't thought about that. Jokic and Doncic, and they'd be licking their chops, man. Man, where was I going? I had something in my head that I was going to say right there, and it totally escaped me. Someone said on the text page, next segment needs to be 5 Reasons I Hate You, Bregman Edition. Oh, I know what I was going to say. I still think, and you got a little taste of it in this All-Star weekend when they let the Rising Stars actually play in the tournament. Like, that was the one game where there was actual, you felt like, oh, man, I feel a little bit of effort here. I see a little something going on. You know, it moved a little bit.
Yeah.
I still think if they just take the 24 guys they pick for the All-Star game and just literally draw a line age-wise, and it's the olds against the youngs, I think that's got its best chance of making this game salvageable. But I've lost the energy to salvage it. I'm just waiting for the NBA to lose the energy to salvage it as well. But man, what a weird weekend. Steph Curry not participating in the 3-point competition in front of his own home crowd is one of the strangest things ever to me.
What was his excuse?
I don't know, but he played in the All-Star game. He has no excuse. Like, the only excuse would be injury. That's the only excuse would be injury. He was the MVP of the All-Star game.
It's ego. It's the same thing that I'm worried about with the U.S. taking on international squad.
Yeah.
His ego can't handle going up and, you know, having a bad performance when he's known as the best 3-point shooter.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Hey, listen to Sports Radio 610 on the Odyssey app. And you do it for an hour a day, and that's your entry into our Slam Dunk in Vegas national contest. If you win, you and 3 friends will be headed to Vegas to stay at Circa, which is they have an amazing sports book there. They've got an amazing stadium swim experience where you can watch all the games out in literally in the pool, watch all the games on these huge screens out there. It's great. You're going to have $20,000 in your pocket, you and your 3 buddies. It's you and 3 friends that are going to get to go. If you win, just download the Odyssey app, listen for an hour each day, and you'll get your daily entry to the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. Mock Draft Injection coming up next. Also, we're giving away rodeo tickets to see Bun B's Birthday Bonanza in the next segment as well. Stick around. Don't go anywhere. It's Payne and Pendergast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Karam Injury Lawyer Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll do our mock draft injection here in just a second. This is a text I got, not on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. I got this to my phone. It's from Reggie Atatula, who you can hear 10 to 2 each day with John Lopez on In the Loop. They do a fantastic show. Reggie said, how fair is it to critique Steph? Does he have to compete every single year? He's done 7 of these. He's an 11-time All-Star. Look, I like Steph Curry. Much to the chagrin of many Rocket fans out there, I'm a Steph Curry fan. My issue is with him not doing it in front of his home crowd. You know, he was played up huge as the face of this weekend in San Francisco. He gushed in the post-game press conference after the All-Star game, saying all sorts of things that almost nobody, practically nobody agreed with about how amazing the weekend was and how this was such a showcase for basketball. There's way more people, it feels like, complaining about that weekend than anything else. But my point is that Steph was, like, vaulted front and center as the host, if you will, like the de facto host of the weekend. So I think him chunking up 25 or 30 three-pointers for the crowd is not a huge ask.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Even what the hell is this?
Been in 7 of them or whatever.
Yeah, come on. Just it's one time. Do it one time.
Come on,
Steph. All right, were you making room for the youngsters? No, this is a League of Stars, Steph Curry.
Yes.
Damn
you're
it.
One of them. Yeah.
I will not. And then the gaming of the Chris Paul and
Wemby
and Wembanyama gaming that little skills obstacle course or whatever. That
was just lame.
I'm doubly offended by that, because for one, all right, it's lame that they tried to game the system, yet at the same time, all right, like, they have a better game where the rules don't incentivize you to tank the 3-point shooting.
Right.
Like, for those of you who don't know, they got this obstacle course and there was a time element, but you got points for making.
The shots, here's how it worked. You win by getting the shortest time doing the obstacle course. They have 3 balls in the rack. If you make one, you don't have to shoot the other 2. So making one speeds it up. And so instead, they just figured, well, it's faster for us just to essentially, like, just dump the rack instead of even attempt a shot. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was a stupid rule. They should have foreseen that being an issue. But then when guys in the league where the gather step and everything else is, like, they do everything, they guys will try to exploit the rule book to the nth degree.
Yeah.
You can't disqualify guys because they're playing by the rules, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And
so
they
it was
did.
Done by, it was done, it violated the spirit of the competition, yet at the same time, you can't disqualify him for it.
They did. They walked over to them, and they walked over and said, you're disqualified.
The All-Star game has actively made me angrier about the NBA.
Yes, it's what it's done to everybody. It's not been a good showcase, man. All right, you know what you need, Seth? You need a mock draft injection. That's exactly what you
need. Give it to me, Sean.
Right into your veins, yes. All right, let's do it. This is a Pro Football Focus mock draft. We do this. This is our mock draft injection. We do it each and every day at about this time during draft season. And we know what the Texans' needs are. The Texans' needs are interior offensive line, wide receiver, and interior defensive line. All feel that seems to be the general consensus among a lot of the experts, too. Like, if you look at needs, those are the three. And that's all we've seen them draft so far in these mock draft injections that we've done. So let's do this one here. Let's see what the Texans are picking. Do they pick anybody different than the folks we've seen over the last week to 10 days? With the 25th pick overall in the 2025 Pro Football Focus mock draft, the Houston Texans select Luther Burden III, wide receiver, Mizzou. They say this, Nico Collins is an established number one wide receiver presence on the outside for the Texans, but adding a talented and productive slot receiver would make life easier for C.J. Stroud and make Houston's offense more dynamic and dangerous. Burden played more than 80% of his snaps out of the slot over the past two seasons and is dangerous with the ball in his hands, and that is 1,000% true. He is a really good football player.
Yeah, and he's I've heard people compare him to Kadarius Toney, but a more polished version. Not on the temperament side.
Less psychopathic version, yeah.
And actually, on that side, on the swarm side of things, he's eager to block. He shows a tenacity when he's blocking, which is a little bit hard to reconcile with, though, too, that his drops tend to increase when there's footsteps nearby. So it's I don't know. He shows plenty of toughness when it comes to wanting to block and do all those things.
Yeah.
But he tends to either lose focus and concentration or in traffic just he's not as sure-handed. But he plays in an offense where he doesn't really have he's got a pretty limited route tree, and the vast majority of his catches were at 10 yards or less. But he does have really good deep ball ability, and he can track the ball really well. This would be a fascinating one. I think he's probably getting drafted around mid-first round to 25 or so.
He is, yep.
So, I wouldn't be upset with that at all. I think... And this is, immediately, though, when you start thinking slot receiver, you go back to, oh, is Nick Caley going to be more of a New England guy or a Rams guy or whatever? I think they're a good football team guy or a good football player team.
Yes.
That is everything that Nick Caley has said, you adjust and adapt to the strengths of your teams. You could see him, though, being a really good complement to Nico Collins.
Yeah.
I think at this point, because a lot of the stuff that you see about him is about Burden.
Yeah.
Is similarly what you're hoping you might get out of Tank Dell when he's healthy.
Yep.
In a new scheme, and they maybe use him more underneath and more effectively. But I don't think you can factor Tank Dell into it right now.
No.
I think that it was such a bad injury. You don't know when he's going to be back and what he's going to look like when he comes back. So I think if that's who they like and when he's there, there's drawbacks, but I would be excited about the upside of
it. I would be excited about that for sake of clarity on this particular mock draft as to who was off the board when the Texans were picking at 25th, the Membu kid also from Missouri. The interior offensive lineman, interior offensive. He's a tackle, but he can play inside. He went off the board at 13. Emeka Abuka off the board at 21 to Pittsburgh. On the board at the time, they picked Luther Burden in this mock draft, Seth. Tyler Booker, still there.
Oh, yeah.
Gray Zabel, still there. And then Kenneth Grant, who is the interior defensive lineman from Michigan that you like a whole lot, also on the board. There as well. So this would be the Texans foregoing maybe the top interior, like not moving from tackle to guard. Like Tyler Booker is a guard and he's really good and he's very swarmy, and they would be passing on him for a slot receiver.
I think the way that free agency is looking right now, and the wide receivers, there's not a lot of guys that I feel really good about giving a big chunk of money to in free agency. Whereas with interior offensive linemen, you know, Trey Smith is the cream of the crop, the right guard from the Chiefs. But you can go out and find viable guys that you can plug in right away at interior line.
Yep.
More so than you just feel better about playing those guys immediately than you do a draft pick. Whereas with wide receivers, we've just seen so many teams able to take rookie wide receivers and get a lot out of them.
Mm-hmm.
That the way this draft is shaping up, I'm thinking the Texans are probably going to get an interior offensive lineman in free agency, and then you enter the draft really more geared towards defensive tackle and wide receiver than anything else. And obviously that all changes depending on who's available. But I would be, if they had already signed an offensive lineman in free agency, then I would be super excited to get a wide receiver with the number 25 pick.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, we're gonna know, these mock drafts are all done based on how things look right now. The actual draft takes place once a lot of the pieces of the puzzle have been put in place through free agency. That's a good point. Hey, we should mention this time tomorrow we will be talking to Texans GM Nick Caserio. So be
He'll
on the
probably tell us who they're going to draft.
Yeah, maybe we'll mock draft with him. Like, all right, who are you taking at 25, Nick? I am anxious to talk to him though. Like, you, the point you just brought up about anytime, it feels like anytime something like a topic is brought up now with the offense over the last few days, people are trying to play this connect the dots game to either the Rams or the Patriots.
Yeah,
with Nick Caley, and I'm guessing Nick has thoughts on that. You know, as far as like what this is going to look like and how much of the, you know, how much of Caley's history even factors into that at all.
I think that honestly, with Caley, the versatility or the adaptability is a year-to-year thing, and he's said multiple times in basically his two public appearances that we've seen from him that you adapt your scheme to the strength of your players.
Yep.
So maybe they do take a little bit more of a best player available type of scenario where they're not as like, this is where it always gets dicey talking about this type of stuff. Like, who knows exactly how much they valued it before. This is one thing that we do know from Nick, because he's spoken to us multiple times about it and he's talked about it. They talk about bands of players in the draft. And I think this is the kind of year where it's going to work into, all right, there might be a point where Luther Burden III, Ibuka, and Matthew Golden are still undrafted.
Yeah.
And maybe you move up to, maybe they're all still undrafted and you're getting down to like the 20th pick.
Yeah.
And maybe the Texans move up to try to get one of those guys
there.
Or by the same token, if a few of those guys are still not there and you're approaching 25, they might move back a little bit.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Some years it's worked out well for the Texans. I think last year it felt to me like they were trying to draft a defensive tackle at the top of the second round or late in the first round, because there was that band of three defensive tackles that all went within four or five picks.
Yep.
And the Texans just missed out on that.
Yeah, band. Yeah. Sometimes that you get a run on something and you can't move back up. That's the tricky part. Takes two to tango. 713-572-4610. Pettycast. It's going to be a good one. We get petty. Ooh. We're always petty. We get super petty at 8 o'clock on Tuesdays. We'll do that coming up next.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.